I think we have titled this retreat something like Awareness and Wisdom. And I just wanted to take a few minutes to maybe unpack that a little bit. What does that mean? What are we doing here? I think we all know we're here to cultivate mindfulness, and the word that's translated as mindfulness, sati. And that term, mindfulness, you know, it's kind of an odd word in some ways. We've gotten used to it in our culture. It's all over the place now. So we have a sense of what it means, but in many ways I feel that the word awareness is more evocative of what we mean when we talk about mindfulness, when we're talking about this quality of sati, this quality of knowing what's happening while it's happening in the present moment. Even just saying the word, are you aware? Sometimes it evokes something in us. Are you mindful? Feels more like, at least I feel like I have to think about it a little bit. The word doesn't land with an emotional resonance so much for me. But awareness, it sometimes can spark a kind of a feeling of the quality of being aware. Are you aware? Right now, are you aware? And maybe you don't exactly know how you know you're aware, but we can know that we're aware. And part of our practice here, what we're exploring really is stabilizing this awareness, stabilizing this capacity to be present, to be aware in the present moment, to know what's happening, to stabilize it over time. And so this is part of our work, part of what we'll be exploring here is how do we stabilize that awareness? But it's not just about the awareness. Sayadaw Utejaniya has given this example. He said, if you see somebody who's kind of yelling and screaming on the street and you go up to them and you say, hey, do you know that you're angry? Are you aware that you're angry? They'll say, yeah, I know that I'm angry. But that kind of awareness is not the kind of awareness that we're looking at here, that we're cultivating here. In that kind of awareness, the person who's angry is often following their anger, is believing that anger, is kind of allowing that anger to guide the mind. Believing that following through and acting on that anger is what will bring happiness, is what will make me feel better, is what will create the situation that I want to have. What we're exploring here, the kind of awareness we're exploring here, is more along the lines of, are you aware that anger is happening in the present moment as something that's happening in the present moment? Maybe we could say, are you aware of what it's like to be a human being that's experiencing anger? To understand that this is a human experience of anger. Not following it or believing it or buying into its story that state, that mind state is the way to get what I want, but more curious about the state itself. Oh, this is what anger is like. That person who's angry on the street is not curious. Oh, what's it like to be angry? That's not what they're doing. But that is really the turning of the awareness that we're cultivating here. We could say this is moving in the direction of wise awareness, of the understanding, the perspective that makes awareness, that makes mindfulness freeing for us, that helps mindfulness to help us to understand our minds, to help us to understand what part of our mind is contributing to our own struggles, our own suffering, our own distress. And so it's important that we have a particular perspective. So this is the wisdom. This is the wisdom side of our retreat, awareness and wisdom. And there's many, many different ways that we can express this wisdom. This is just one way of expressing it. And I was inspired to bring this up partly because of the number of you, several of you mentioning just being curious in the opening circle. That curiosity of what's this experience? When we can have that curiosity, it does begin to bring the perspective of wisdom. It's a simple kind of wisdom that allows this quality of mindfulness to be very penetrating, to help our minds to understand what is leading towards happiness and well-being, and what is leading towards suffering. And as our mindfulness understands that, as our minds understand that, it begins to naturally gravitate towards what leads us to well-being, because that's what our minds want to do. Our human organism naturally wants to move in the direction of well-being. And so bringing this quality of awareness joined with wisdom begins to allow our organism to learn that something like anger is not, that following through on that is not actually the way to well-being. It's actually the way to cultivate more anger. As the Buddha famously said, whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. We frequently ponder thoughts of anger, of frustration, of confusion. That becomes what happens more and more in our system. But when we bring mindfulness with this curiosity of what is this experience? What is this that's happening right now as a human experience? That begins to let our minds kind of get a new education. We get a new education about what does lead to a deeper kind of well-being, not a kind of momentary well-being, but a deeper kind of well-being that comes from letting go. And so we'll be talking over the course of these days around different ways to understand the wisdom that joins up with this awareness. There are many different ways to speak to it. This understanding, wise view, essentially, wise view, is the foundation of our practice. If we have this kind of perspective to support us, our practice will head in the direction of more peace, more ease, more freedom.
So I'll add a few words about the framing of what we're doing here during this month that we're going to squeeze into a week. It might feel like a month at times. So that's okay. So with awareness and wisdom, as Andrew was speaking to, these kind of beautiful qualities that are natural to our mind and heart. They're not something that we need to try so hard to create. We can easily drift away from them as natural qualities, but they also are available to us. So I'd like to just speak about some of the ways in which these qualities can arise and the framing kind of the attitude that we might hold our practice. So one of these classic phrases in the Dharma is the way things are, coming to understand the way things are or the way things have come to be. And that is, in a way, we could say, well, this is what's reality. And we are always immersed in reality. We never truly are separate from reality other than our misunderstanding. So through our mental activity, we can feel very far from wisdom, from understanding, from clarity. And yet even that confusion is happening. Right? Even the delusion, the distortions of perception and views are what's happening. But through the filter of the mind, we don't recognize, oh, this is what's here. So kind of as a foundational thing that we can really relax and rest into, something that I really appreciate in the Dhamma field, is this sense that everything belongs. Everything belongs. Our tiredness belongs. Our grumpiness belongs. Our introversion belongs. Our extroversion belongs. Our humor, our sadness, all of it. It is this nature. All of our different kind of parts and aspects to what makes us in a way unique, so that we can begin to as well recognize the universal principles in which these unique aspects of our own mind and heart. There are just expressions, beautiful expressions of our history. So all of that can really arrive here and rest in this sense of this is the Dhamma opens to us, and we're at home in this field. So I hope that in a way kind of encourages your mind and heart to feel that you can really relax into being here. In these first few days, we'll probably emphasize a fair bit to really rest and to relax, that the work of awareness, of cultivating the mind and heart, isn't kind of a reaching in and trying to make something happen. It's really allowing ourselves to be where we are. Allowing kind of these qualities that just need a bit of remembering, of reminding. Right? That's how they're going to arise. So one of the understandings that we have about the nature of the mind, you say mind and heart, meaning the mental processes, is that they're always coming and going. Each moment, a new moment. Each moment, a new moment. And so as Andre was pointing to, when we allow anger to be what is in the mind, in a way we are practicing anger. And without awareness and without wisdom, okay, now we're practicing identification and maybe reactivity around the anger, beginning to open and recognize, oh, this is the energy of this mental state, of tiredness, right, of physical exhaustion, of mental exhaustion. Each moment of remembering to be aware is deepening, strengthening that quality. Doesn't need a lot of pushing, doesn't need a lot of work. One of the analogies I like to think of is this idea of kind of pushing on a swing. You know, to push a swing, maybe in the first step or two, there's a little bit of needing to push a little bit more energy. But in understanding the nature of the swing, the kind of dynamics of how a swing works, it's very light. Just a little push. So understanding the nature of awareness, similar. Very light. We don't need to create. We don't need to get rid of anything. We're really allowing this capacity of our mind to know. Right? To know what's happening. So a big support, again, is this sense that everything is part of nature. Everything is okay. All of the mental activity, all of our feelings, our woundedness, our strengths, right? All of it. Activities of the mind and body, when we understand the nature of awareness and wisdom, it's really an invitation to settle back and to arrive to what is already happening, to receive this moment. So another key part of what is going to be providing support for us during this time is really the container that we set up together. And that collective field, the community field, has, as many of you know, I've been on retreats before, I've heard this, but it's part of kind of what we contribute to as we enter this field. It's just the reminder of this shared intention when we come into community together. You know, what is it that brings us here? And so I'll speak a little bit about the refuges, and then I'll pass it on to Anna to speak about the precepts. And these refuges are this understanding of what is it that we find a sense of safety in. What brings us a sense of ease? And it's something so valuable to reflect on when we come together, that this is really an amazing thing to do, is to come together with 40 other people, many of whom you don't know, maybe you don't know anyone. And yet there's this shared intention to awaken, right? To establish more clarity, to show up, to become vulnerable to what is here, to sit through the ups and downs, right? The cycles of our heart and mind. So these three main refuges that the Buddha spoke about, we can actually hold in our own way. You know, it doesn't have to be in these particular words, but taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, the Buddha, this capacity of being present to what's here. And really just appreciating, this is what we're here to do. Right? As you feel one another in this space, just recognizing, you know, we all have our own journey. Maybe we're coming through some hardships. Someone else is going through something difficult. We don't know that, but that we have the shared intention to really be here, not just kind of living out the habitual kind of toppling forward into experience, but there's this intention, beautiful intention to awaken, open the heart, to know what's happening. And then taking refuge in the Dhamma. Dhamma can mean the reality of experience. Dhamma can also mean that these teachings of liberation, of freedom from suffering. And so you might just drop into your own heart What is it that you take refuge in terms of this orientation? And why are you here to feel into the Dhamma? In a way, you're turning towards reality, turning towards your own heart and mind to see what's actually going on. And in a way, before it's too late, like we have the conditions now to awaken, to develop the mind and heart. And these teachings are incredibly valuable. They've been walked by so many beings before us who have done this and shown, yes, this is worth doing. This is a gift to oneself and a gift to others. And then Sangha, taking refuge in community, it might be remembering teachers that you've had or reflecting on beings in the past who have walked this path, and to whatever extent they were able to, freed their heart and mind from the causes of suffering. But really also this immediate sense of being in a space together. I often reflect on how coming into a retreat environment, how lonely it would be if we were to walk in here and no one else would be here day after day. You know, so at times if you feel like you're getting triggered by the group, you could think, well, maybe it would be lonely being here alone all the time. That's a good counter thought, just to know, right, these friends on the path, they remind me to keep going. And then when I touch into these qualities that are truly uplifting and inspiring, other beings are trying to do this as well. And it sort of supports us and buoys us along our journey when we see community. All right, so having this just general orientation of these shared intentions, shared feelings of what brings us safety and refuge. And it's kind of a little bit just symbolic, just starting off the retreat in that way, having this in mind of what it is that we're doing. It'd be a very different situation if we came in here and we had a big, you know, flat screen TV here with news in the world. It was like, oh my gosh, right? Because that would be the culture that we'd be setting. And yet here, you know, with a statue, in a way embodying this movement towards settledness, towards ease. And we collectively really are supporting that together. And you might not even know it just by sitting where you are. You're resonating your own intention, and it fills this room. Really, really does. And so just touching into that, recognizing and these shared aspirations and intentions of our hearts to be here. I'll pass it on to Anna to speak a bit about precepts.
So, being here together this week, it's really important that everyone will be able to feel as safe as possible. Very important condition for opening of the heart and the mind. And the five precepts, practicing with the five precepts or the five practice guidelines, important means to that end. The first of these five precepts is about refraining from harming living beings. Refraining from harming anybody here, including ourselves. The second one is about refraining from taking that which is not given. Refraining from taking possessions of anybody else, or maybe refraining from taking that extra portion of dessert if that's not offered. The third precept is about refraining from harmful sexual activity. And in this human mind, all kinds of impulses may arise. And we can let them arise, and we can allow them to be there. But what we can practice is to refrain from acting on harmful impulses. The fourth precept is about refraining from harmful speech. It should be pretty easy, given that this is a silent retreat. But that precept can be practiced if you're writing notes to the managers or to the teachers, or when you're meeting with the teachers. Then the fifth precept is about refraining from taking intoxicants that cloud the mind. So by refraining from taking alcohol, consuming alcohol or recreational drugs during this retreat, we create conditions for us much clarity to arise in our minds as possible. It's important to remember that these are not commandments, these are practice guidelines, something to experiment with and something to be aware of, being aware of like what happens in this body and in this mind and in this heart when we follow these precepts. And if we sometimes don't, what happens then? What leads to well-being? What doesn't? And finally, to remember that we are all human, meaning that we are all, every one of us, imperfect. So if we sometimes fail, things didn't go as planned or as we intended to, seeing that as an opportunity to practice compassion for oneself and forgiveness for oneself.
That was a kind of a ritual that we do at the beginning of a retreat. We chant together an expression of these refuges and precepts as an expression of our commitment together to create this container in which we are honoring the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha through connecting with these practices, through connecting with that capacity to be aware, with the Sangha as a support, to see the Dharma, to see the truth of things as they are. And the container, this container is supported by these ethical agreements that we all agree. This is a value for us to live together in this way. Non-harming really being the foundation of all the precepts, that if we want to free our minds from struggle and suffering, then engaging in a way that doesn't add struggle and suffering into the world is beneficial. And so we take these together out loud, and here at IRC we chant the refuges in Pali, which I will do in call and response. And if you're new to this, if you've not chanted this before, you can try to carry on. I'll hopefully do it in a way that you can follow. But if it gets to the place where you don't feel like you can follow, you can just kind of sit in the field of listening to these refuges. The precepts we will take together in English. I will also do those in call and response. But the Pali for the precept, for the refuges, I just like to give you the words a little bit. The first line of the refuges, is basically an homage or an honoring of the Buddha. So the first sentence that we will chant together, and we'll chant that one together three times, is basically expressing gratitude and appreciation for the Buddha for having discovered this path. In a simple way, we could say that's what we're expressing with this first line that we'll chant together three times. And then we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And then we do it again. We'll do it three times. We'll say, for the second time, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. For the third time, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And the words of this are pretty simple. Buddhang means Buddha. Saranang means refuge. Gacchami means to walk towards. So this first sentence of the refuge, Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, essentially means I walk in the direction of the refuge of the Buddha. And then the second, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, and Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Then we express the second time, and the third time we add the word Dutiyampi for the second time, and the word Tatiyampi for the third time, so that you'll have a sense of what you're chanting when we're chanting this together. So we'll chant this in a simple tune. And I'll chant a few words for the homage. I'll chant a few words at a time, and then you can respond. For the first time through the refuges, the Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, I'll chant a few words at a time. When we get to the second time and the third time, we'll do more together.
Namo Tassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang.
And the precepts we'll do together in English, a line at a time, or a few words at a time. I undertake the training,
to refrain from killing living
beings.
I undertake the training
to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I undertake the training
from creating harm through my sexuality.
I undertake the training
to refrain from false speech.
I undertake the training
to refrain from intoxicants
which cloud the mind and lead to heedlessness.
Thank you for taking the refuges and precepts together. And now Alexis will lead us in a brief guided meditation.
Yeah. Just one thing during the precepts, most you've heard, but with the fifth priest, the.
I was thinking of the third.
Which one? What did you want to say about the third? Not taking intoxicants. Just a reminder that doesn't mean not taking anything that for you supports your health. So any of your medications or anything that would be for your body or mental health, to continue that's been. Good for you, so please, that's not the right time to come off of anything.
So the third precept on retreat. So in the lay precepts, the third precept is about not creating harm through sexuality. On retreat, we go a little further. We actually renounce any intentional activity. Any intentional sexual activity. So let's take that part together. I undertake the training
to refrain from intentional sexual activity.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're
let
ready.
We'll let you off of that at the end of the retreat.
Yes. All right, so let's sit briefly, knowing that most of us have arrived here pretty tired. So just allowing yourself to arrive into whatever posture for you feels comfortable, supported. I might just invite in this general attitude of sense of ease, not needing to do anything, and not even needing to be a meditator yet, and just letting the shoulders drop a little bit, softening the face. Some tensions we can't choose to let go of, but the ones that feel we can soften just by bringing a little awareness there, that can help set the right general frame of mind. Not needing to penetrate or focus the mind hard in order for awareness to arise. As you're sitting here, you might just have a general knowing at the start of this retreat, sensing into your state of mind, your body and heart. Allowing whatever you find to be okay. If you're feeling tired, allowing yourself to feel tired and knowing this state. And then very gently allowing yourself to begin to recognize whatever feels easy for you to know. It might be sitting. And know that you're sitting. It's as simple as that. In cultivating moments of knowing, of awareness, it doesn't depend so much on what it is that's being known. And we can settle back and relax and acknowledge what is already happening. You might just keep it very simple for now, sitting and know that you're sitting. Or in feeling the body, maybe become aware of the breathing, in and out breath. As we arrive into a retreat environment, the world still lingers quite prominently in the mind and body. So these first days, having this orientation of nothing to do, nowhere to go, but arriving here. Are you aware? Just noticing that phrase landing into the mind. Are you aware? Very light. With our own wisdom and understanding, we can appreciate the sense of ease that accompanies that. This is not demanding, but inviting. We can soften the heart and relax the body. And then check if the mind is aware. Relaxing and arriving. And we have this opportunity to cultivate our practice and there's no other things we have to do during this week together. And there's nothing that we can make happen. And yet our practice still does unfold by orienting our intention. And so as we move towards closing out the night and moving towards bed, and keeping a very light and relaxed orientation, knowing that in order to live with the Dhamma, it has to be sustainable. And we neither want to push nor forget, but very light, staying at home in your experience, knowing that rest and ease are deep supports, particularly in these first days. Thank you for coming on retreat and for your practice. And on behalf of the teachers, just want to wish you a good night's rest. Of course, if you have energy, the hall is open for you. But we'd encourage rest. And morning sittings at 6:00.